Hello, everyone, and welcome to Module 7 of Advanced Aromatherapy, Therapeutic Application of Essential Oils for Clarity, Health, and Happiness with David Crow, titled Essential Oils and the Digestive System, Part 2. This is your host, Colleen, at the Shift Network. Just a couple little reminders. If you do have a technical issue and you're on the phone, press 5. On your keypad, and I'll come along and assist you. And if you have any technical questions or problems while using the webcast, please type directly into the message box. Be sure to include your email address so we can reply by email. And I'm sure some of you have noticed today that Maestro Conference has been sending out many reminders. Just so you know, that was an error on Maestro software, and they are fixing it. And that covers it for today. So let's bring on David and get started. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Colleen. And welcome to everybody all over the world. Let's go ahead and get started by opening files. So if you would please go to the course page and open the link for Module 6, because we still have a few things to finish and many new files coming this week. So if you would click on the link titled Monographs for Module 6 and 7, that's all we need to open from last week, because we will be referring to those herbs for digestive functions. Now, if you would click on the link for Module 7, you will see that we have many new files, a lot of things to discuss about the digestive system, and a few things to finish as well from last week. A few things for the respiratory system as well. So if you'll just go through these, if you click on the link for each of these PDFs, they will open into a new web page. So if you would please open the file titled Aromatherapy Inhalation for Nausea and Chemo and Cancer. Nausea of Chemo and Cancer. This file will be where we will start, and this is a lot of scientific research that has to do with the effects of essential oils on the digestive system. I'll just introduce these files briefly, then we will go through them. So the next file that you would be opening is titled Aromatic Herb Preparations. Aromatic Herb Preparations. Just going down the list there, opening these together so we have them all ready. Aromatic Herb Preparations is a little information on how we use some of the aromatic herbs to make teas, because we're not going to be using just essential oils for treating the digestive system, because as I have explained, essential oils are not really the best treatment. The herbs are the best treatment, but we will study how they can be used together. Then, going down the list, we're going to find an article titled Dental Health, Natural Approaches. This is an article that I wrote for a medical conference and presented a few times. There's a lot of information about using herbs for treating gingivitis and tooth decay and things like that, and we will use it as a reference file. Then, moving down the list, go ahead and open the file titled Digestive Synergies and Formulas. This is the core material that we're going to be studying. These are the basic oils that we will be using for digestive purposes, and the basic oils to create synergies with. So this will give us our blending options. Then we have a file titled Digestive Therapeutics, if you would open that up, please, and that will give us the basic groups of oils that are used for various specific therapeutic functions. You can see groups such as analgesic and antiemetic and antispasmodic, all the different functions. So this is a good cross-reference chart that we will be using to understand how these various oils can be classed in terms of therapeutic function. Going down the list further, essential oils and the 15 sub-doshas. This is another article, so obviously today you are receiving a lot of reference material for homework, and I hope that you have had a good 2 weeks studying all the files that you've accumulated up until now. And so this is an article that is just supplemental material. It does not have anything to do specifically with the digestive system, but it is an article that describes the 15 types of Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. And so it is an article that will give you a good introduction to how you can understand the functioning of essential oils according to this particular system of five Vatas, five Pittas, and five Kaphas. Now, don't worry about this. I'm not going to expect you to read and understand all of this right now. This is for your reading enjoyment. It will take you some time to read it and to digest it and to think about it. But what I would like you to consider when you are reading this is that this is a system that breaks down different physiological systems, energetic systems of the body, and it then considers how do essential oils come in contact with the physical body. And there are a lot of misconceptions about essential oils being able to do all kinds of things that they don't really do. And as I've outlined several times, essential oils are very, very good for the respiratory system, and essential oils are a secondary treatment for the digestive system. But how do we explain that? How do we understand that? And so if you take some time and you read this article, you will see that the essential oils have a direct relationship with our inhalation and exhalation. Those are two types of subdoshas of vata. And that the essential oils do not have any direct relationship to certain digestive functions, and that the whole plant form will have certain functions, and then there are entire systems such as our kidney, urinary, reproductive system, where essential oils have a very minimal application at all. So this is something for you to just read through. A lot of information here. Let's go back to the course page and let's look at the next thing, which is the Pharmacopoeia of Aromatic Herbs and Spices. Go ahead and open that. Now, for those of you who have taken the Advanced Herbal Medicine, Medicinal Plants, and Spiritual Evolution course, you will see that this is a collection of monographs that was given in modules 1 and 2, and I am bringing this over from that course because in the treatment of the digestive system, we would like to understand how to use essential oils for the digestive system in the whole plant form, since we cannot ingest the essential oils without a high risk of hurting ourselves more than our digestive system is already hurting. So this is something to look at that we'll use as a reference today. And going on further, we come to the respiratory synergies. And the respiratory synergies, I will circle back around because this is what is left from our discussion of the respiratory system. We did cover some of this, but I didn't have that file completed. Here it is. It is completed. And if you scroll down, you will see that we will also have a little discussion about the primary oils and synergies for asthma. Very important subject, which we will touch on at the end of today's class. Then, finally, our last file is the webcast questions from 2 weeks ago, and we can go ahead and start with this, and I'll just go ahead and open things up here also. Now that I have introduced all of our files, I'll just mention that if you would like to call in and give a wonderful testimonial, or you have any particular concerns or questions or comments or anything, let's take a minute or two and take your calls. Or if you would like to submit something on the webcast, you can do that. And while you are doing that, I'll just go ahead and review a few of the things here that came in 2 weeks ago. A question here about which frankincense resin do you chew? Something about the first question is, again, the issue of how the herbs work. This person has observed the first statement here, that they've made many blends for digestion with essential oils that have been very effective. Nice testimonial. Essential oil blends for digestion can be very effective, and I'm not exactly sure how they are using these. Here it is right in front of me. This person combines several oils in a salve to rub on the belly. And this is one of the major application methods that we'll be talking about. This was introduced in the last class. And my comment to that is, well, you can do the same thing with the herbs as well. And both. That's the direction we're going to be taking the class very soon here is that we don't have to try to do just one thing. There's absolutely nothing wrong with putting essential oils in a salve and rubbing them on your belly. You're going to get wonderful therapeutic results from that. And the therapeutic results will be even better if you drink tea along with it. Now, if we go through here one more, just a couple more things here quickly. Do I have any comments about dill as an essential oil or herb? And yes, dill is an excellent herb. It is specifically for infant colic. And that's the basis of what's traditionally called gripe water. I will give you a recipe for that in today's class. Gripe water can be fed to infants for griping, which is cramping, colic cramping in the infant's digestive system. Another question here about asthma. Are we going to cover it? Yes, we're going to cover it. And some further comments here about the combination of essential oils on acupuncture points. Thank you. A few other teachers of these systems are mentioned. A question about a synthetic oil used as a carrier, which I don't recommend. And how do we decide ratios in the blends and odor intensity? This is a good question. Odor intensity is really a primary factor for perfumery, but it's less of a question in making therapeutic blends. So in other words, odor intensity means the level at which we perceive the fragrance. And that also has to do with what's called the dry out phase. And we will spend a little bit of time with blending as we move along. But these are not the primary concerns that we have when we are blending therapeutic blends. In general, what I have found is that it's very difficult to actually make a bad smelling blend unless you are working with some really strong types of unusual fragrances, and there's really just a handful of them. For example, the Jatamansi oil, relative of the valerian. It has a very strong fragrance that's a little bit difficult to work with from the olfactory standpoint. But on the other hand, it's not that difficult either. It blends fairly easily with lots of things and comes out okay. But if we look at the general larger categories, you can blend flower oils with other flower oils and they always come out really nice. You can't ruin it. You can blend the conifer oils, eucalyptus oils together, same thing. There's not going to be anything that goes wrong from the olfactory standpoint. It may not be the perfect harmony and synergistic effect, but it smells fine. And then, same thing with the sacred scents, frankincense and Palo Santo and all of those, they blend together nicely. And then, if you look at the different groups blending together, the sacred scents of frankincense goes so nicely with the conifers, and those go so nicely with the citruses, and those go so nicely with the flowers. So with the basic oils, it's really difficult actually to do something wrong at the olfactory level. And so we're approaching this more from the standpoint of what oils do you want in the combination from the therapeutic standpoint. What we do have to consider, however, that is very important here is not the olfactory intensity, the odor intensity, or the dry out phase of the perfume on the perfume strip. What we really need to consider is the dermotoxic potential. And I've already started to outline that. In Module 3, the oils are grouped in the file titled Primary Functions of Botanical Therapeutic Categories. So that's what we want to refer to. And so it's much more important to know that cinnamon oil and oregano oil are dermotoxic, high dermotoxic risk, that citruses have phototoxic risk. This is much more important than actually the odor intensity, but excellent question. Thank you. Here's another one. I always thought that oregano oil and herb used in a diffuser is very good for respiratory infections. Yes, it is. You can use other herbaceous spices such as thyme, tulsi, marjoram, and so on. These are all good, both in the diffuser and for making teas. Okay, so I'll just leave the rest of these. So many questions, so many comments. Very, very long question at the end here about the minutia of conversions and math and all of that. And this is important, but let's also remember that many of the kinds of measurements that we are learning in this course are general estimates. And that's because aromatherapy is not an exact science. It is partly a science, but it is really more of an art. It's like home cooking, and that's very similar with herbal medicine, is that unless you are in a clinical situation with a patient who is extremely ill and you have to monitor the doses down to the drops, you don't have to worry about it. It's a relatively simple thing to make a tea. I gave you a file today. We'll review that, and you'll just see that you can't go wrong if you make a mistake between putting 1 teaspoon or 2 teaspoons of dried tulsi leaf into a cup of hot water. It's a very inexact science. We're using plant material to cook with. All right, Colleen, I'll turn it back to you. Is anybody waiting impatiently on the phone to get through?
Not yet, but I wanted to remind everyone to press 1 if you'd like to ask David a question or share with the group. Now is the time.
Okay.
On your telephone.
That's probably good enough, and if nobody's calling in, I will shift our attention. Good webcast questions, good discussions, and I'll just go ahead and feel free to interrupt if somebody calls in the next minute or so, but now that I've introduced everything, I'll just go ahead and jump into our course. Picking up where we left off, talking about essential oils for the digestive system, a quick review here. I mentioned that there are 3 primary methods of using essential oils for digestive problems. 1, inhalation of the essential oils to stimulate digestion. 2, abdominal massage and or essential oils in compresses. And that not only gives you the effect through the skin, absorption into the abdomen itself, but you're also going to get the activation through the olfactory system as well. The 3rd primary method is to use the aromatic herbs. And the reason for that, as I have stressed several times, is that the essential oils cannot be brought safely into the GI tract. The essential oils in the plant form, however, are in a biocompatible level, in other words, extremely dilute, and therefore they are safe to be brought directly into contact. Now, this is the major difference between using essential oils for the respiratory system and using essential oils for the digestive tract. It's very easy to understand. The essential oils for the respiratory system come in direct contact with the mucous membranes through the atmosphere, because every time we inhale, we are bringing the air element in, and that air element contains micro droplets of essential oils that will come in contact with the sinus cavity, and then step by step with the upper lobes of the lungs, and then a little bit down into the medium layer of the middle lobes of the lungs, and so forth. In other words, essential oils in the atmosphere are a direct method of coming directly in contact with the respiratory mucous membrane, but we can't do that with the digestive system. We can only work on the digestive system with essential oils indirectly. Therefore, we would like to combine all of these different methods. Now, I'm going to approach the modules with a slightly different format now, because I'm assuming that after all of this time, the first couple of months here of introduction and orientation and moving into some specific therapeutics, that you now have some essential oils and that you probably also have some blending supplies and you also have your perfume strips. I'm going to assume that, and so I am going to start giving you these formulas as if we were doing a live class. Everybody's sitting together. I've got all the materials set out. So from now on, you would like to have your blending supplies set up on a table. And so if you are listening to this in the recorded audio, you might want to just pause and go get all your blending supplies set up or listen to this again. because now we can actually go through these steps together. And I think that will make it a little bit more hands-on, a little more enjoyable, and we'll be able to make some things together rather than it being so theoretical. It is a challenge doing this by phone as opposed to in person, but hopefully this will make it a little more personalized. So we have some things for, we have a file here that will take us fairly deeply into understanding the inhalation of essential oils for the digestive system. So in other words, now we're going to start unpacking the three primary ways of using essential oils for the digestive system. Inhalation, to stimulate the appetite, or we will find to relax the nervous system, because aromatherapy can be used indirectly to help our digestive system if it helps us to relax. Let's keep in mind that a tremendous amount of digestive disturbance is caused by the nervous system. You will see when you read the subdosha file that this is basically our pranavata, the primary vata of the brain and the nervous system, has a very strong effect on our samanavata, in other words, the nervous system of our digestive functioning, and that in turn causes a lot of digestive symptoms. In other words, if we're going to translate that back from Ayurvedic terms now, we basically say that stress causes stagnation. It causes tension and blockage in our digestive system, and it causes increase of inflammation as well. That leads to a whole range of things, and of course, it's not just stress that is a primary cause of digestive problems. It's also that stress worsens any kind of other pre-existing digestive problems, and to make it even more complicated, digestive problems cause us stress. So if we have stagnation, we have motility problems, we have constipation, we have irritable bowels, it works both ways. Stress makes it worse, and when the symptoms are bad, it gives us emotional tension. It gives us mental disturbance. So therefore, when we're talking now about using inhalation of essential oils, either from a perfume strip or the inhalation that would come if we use these on the abdomen as well, it's not just the essential oils that are directly related to the digestive system we think about. We think about things that cause us to unwind emotionally, that cause our mind to relax, that cause the nervous system to relax. So now if you would go back to the file, the first one that we opened from this week, this is another collection of research studies. This one is titled Aromatherapy Inhalation for Nausea of Chemo and Cancer. That's not all there is on here. There's a number of other things, but that is the name of the file. And what I would like to do now is go through this very quickly, because as you can see, this is 30 pages of information, but I have learned how to scan this type of study very, very quickly, and I'll tell you how you can learn how to do this as well. You read the most important part of the abstract only, the conclusion. You read the title and you read the conclusion. Then if you find something particularly fascinating, you can go back and you can read all of the details about the study itself and all the different implications and the exact methods and the all the different variables that they considered and so forth. But what I'm going to do here now is I'm going to give you an overview of the scientific research that validates the use of essential oils in inhalation only for treating different types of nausea and other digestive problems. So this is the scientific confirmation of what I have been saying several times already, which is essential oils and aromatherapy work directly on the digestive tract through the olfactory system, and therefore let's use that. So number one, the use of aroma sticks at a cancer center. This is a title. Now just scroll down to the bottom, and what do you see? a total of 514 aroma sticks were given out. And what this study was looking at is, why did people use these perfume strips, okay, with a fragrance on it? And the most common reasons were to alleviate nausea or to encourage relaxation. And this is in a cancer clinic. And what were the oils that they used? Lavender, lemon, frankincense, bergamot, orange, peppermint. These were the things that people requested the most often. That's just an introduction. Next study along the same line, aroma sticks and cancer care. Cute little title, an innovation not to be sniffed at. Well, we can just scroll down here, and what do we see in the results? 77% of all patients reported deriving at least one benefit. 65% reported feeling more relaxed. 47% of nauseous patients said that it helped settle their nausea. 55% said it helped them to sleep better. These are important things to consider. Why? Well, because it's not saying 100% of people got 100% relief. This is something to consider about aromatherapy. Aromatherapy is very individual. It is very much based on the person, their condition, the fragrance, how they like the fragrance, the emotional memories of the fragrance, and so forth. So therefore, when I have given you these files of these therapeutic groups of oils, you'll see that one group of oils has 10 or 15 different oils in it. And the question may come, well, which is the best oil? In reality, we don't really know, because this is aromatherapy. It's going through the olfactory system. If we're talking about herbs going through the digestive tract, orally ingested, the variables seem to be much less. But these are some things to consider here. Now let's just keep going here. Now what you can do, if you want to go along with us, is that you can put some ginger oil on a perfume strip. So for those of you who have your oils ready to go, those of you who have a perfume strip, let's study along with this particular research file here. Put a few drops of ginger oil on a perfume strip. And this one is titled, The Effect of Inhaled Ginger Aromatherapy on Chemotherapy-Induced Nausea and Vomiting and Health-Related Quality of Life in Women with Breast Cancer. That's a pretty important topic. There's a lot of women who are going through chemotherapy for breast cancer. There's a lot of women who are experiencing nausea and who are experiencing health-related quality of life issues. Well, what do we find? Go ahead and scroll down a little further, down to the results. The nausea score was significantly lower after ginger essential oil inhalation compared to placebo during the acute phase of nausea. This is important confirmation. Inhaling ginger oil is very good for the nausea of chemo, but look at what it says next. Not sustained for overall treatment effect. Look a little further. No significant effect of aromatherapy on vomiting. However, significant change for global health status. So what does this mean? Conclusion is always good to read. The evidence derived from this study is not sufficiently convincing that inhaled ginger aromatherapy is an effective complementary treatment, but encouraging. All right, that's a, you know, pretty straightforward piece of information. Now let's keep on going here. Post-operative nausea. This is, you have a surgery, you wake up, you feel really bad. Okay, the anesthesia is making you feel sick. So aromatherapy is a treatment for this. Now we can extract a lot of information, because if we see that ginger oil is effective for nausea during chemotherapy, we can also assume it's effective for other kinds of nausea as well. So what is the conclusion of this? The hypothesis that aromatherapy would be effective as a treatment for post-operative nausea was supported. Further research is necessary. How about this study? Investigating the effects of ginger essence on post-nephrectomy nausea and vomiting. Well, what do they say? Ginger essence has a positive effect. It is recommended for nausea and vomiting. So this is another aspect of the scientific studies that we see, is that some studies actually come out with very strong positive results. Some come out with very strong negative results, and some are kind of mixed. And so we can just go ahead and scroll down, and we can see several studies here. Post-discharge nausea for abdominal surgery. What do they say about this? Effective treatment. Okay, and let's see. Let me scroll back up, and let's see what they were using. They actually don't say here what essential oil they were using. Let's move on here. How about a peppermint aromatherapy on nausea in women post C-section? Well, what do they say about peppermint? Peppermint may be useful. Okay. How about nausea and vomiting of pregnancy? Now, this is a topic that we're going to talk about in a future module. And there is a lot of diversity of opinion about whether women who are pregnant should be using any kind of aromatherapy. And some people are advocating what I consider to be very unsafe uses, where women are being advised to actually take essential oils internally, even in relatively high doses during the first trimester. I think this is a very dangerous practice. But what about some of the inhalation of essential oils? I know that we can safely advocate that for nausea of pregnancy, that women can drink ginger tea, that they can drink peppermint tea. Now, it doesn't mean that you should drink high amounts of it. Be reasonable. But those types of things are universally used and highly effective and very simple. So let's look at a couple possibilities from the aromatherapy department here. The effect of lemon inhalation on nausea and vomiting of pregnancy. And this is even a double-blinded, randomized, and controlled clinical trial. This is not just a bunch of hearsay. Conclusion, lemon scent can be effective in reducing nausea and vomiting of pregnancy. Now, this is something that you might not have thought of. You might have thought, well, maybe I should breathe peppermint. That's a very common thing that women think of, or maybe ginger. But who would have thought? Lemon can do it. Now, how about this next one? Study of the effect of mint oil on nausea and vomiting during pregnancy. Well, mint oil is something that you would probably think of, but what does the conclusion say? It doesn't have the effect on nausea and vomiting of pregnancy. Well, maybe it's just that particular group. Maybe it's just that particular peppermint oil, or maybe peppermint oil doesn't really work that well, and lemon oil really does work better. How about ginger as an herb for nausea? Now, we're switching over here. I just threw this in because it was coming up with all of those other studies on ginger. Again, this is chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting, and this is the internal use of the ginger herb. And the conclusion is that it reduces the prevalence of nausea for 6 to 24 hours post-chemotherapy. This is information that more and more doctors are hearing about, and ginger for chemotherapy nausea is becoming much more well-known. And so more studies here just about the use of ginger as an herb. And now we come to a very important topic that a lot of people have heard about, but it's a little bit more complicated than it appears at first. Many people have heard that if you take peppermint essential oil, that it can be good for irritable bowel syndrome. Now, irritable bowel syndrome has a lot of different manifestations, and it can come in different stages and be at different levels of severity. So first of all, we have to know a little bit more diagnostically. Now, the main thing that you must be aware of is that you can't just start taking drops of peppermint oil on your tongue. That's the most important piece of information to take away from all these studies, is that if you take it on your tongue, you run a high risk of irritating the mouth, the esophagus, and the stomach. And it even says in these studies that that can happen. So what are these studies pointing to? they are talking about the use of peppermint oil in coated capsules that will pass through the upper GI tract and won't open up until later in the lower GI tract. But even so, the results are mixed. So what do we see here? Basically some positive results, but if we scroll down to the conclusions, at 6 weeks of therapy, abdominal pain is markedly improved in the peppermint oil group compared to the placebo group. But 2 weeks after the end of the trials, the pain increased again. Other symptoms and quality of life did not improve significantly. So what does this mean? This study concludes that peppermint oil is effective in relieving only abdominal pain in diarrhea-predominant irritable bowels. So that's one of the types of irritable bowel syndrome. Diarrhea type, and what we find is, okay, the capsules help with the pain of the diarrhea type. That's important because we don't want to be just throwing essential oils or herbs at symptoms. We want to be able to target things more specifically and really understand what they do, when they do it, and why they don't. Here's another study, treatment of mint oil and irritable bowel syndrome. And if we scroll down, we're going to see, okay, there's some mixed results here. A 4-week treatment with peppermint oil improves abdominal symptoms. That's great. But let's remember what happened in the other study. After they stopped taking it, the symptoms returned. Now, here would be my professional clinical observation about this. This is one of the reasons we don't want to rely on just one thing. Treating irritable bowels with only a capsule of mint essential oil is a very allopathic approach. We're trying to find the magic bullet. We're not really thinking holistically. We're not thinking about relaxing the nervous system with massage and acupuncture. We're not thinking about getting the gluten out of the diet. We're not thinking about all the other dietary changes. We're not thinking about using a variety of other herbs such as slippery elm and marshmallow root that are very demulcent, and licorice root that brings the inflammation down. Now, if you start to bring all of those other things in, then when you stop taking the capsule of peppermint oil, the symptoms won't return probably because you're going to be making a much deeper change in the terrain. Here's another study. I included several of these because it's really good to compare these. Don't just read one study and say, well, it's like this. And so the number of subjects free from abdominal pain or discomfort changed from 0 to 14. Okay, nice. Severity of abdominal pain also significantly reduced. This is talking about a specific type of preparation, a specific product. Now, let's look at a short study, and there's many of these aromatic herbs for irritable bowels. I wanted to throw this in because what they're finding is that a lot of the aromatic herbs have antibacterial activities and that they therefore could be good candidates for testing for irritable bowels, and that includes coriander, lemon balm, spearmint. Well, guess what? We can use coriander, lemon balm, and spearmint as herbs, and they can be very helpful for a wide variety of digestive problems. These are in the monographs that I included. Here's a few more things that are very helpful and take us now into the transition towards abdominal applications. And this is aromatherapy for constipation. And a lot of people have sluggish transit and stagnation. In this particular study, meridian massage with aroma oil for children with brain disabilities. And what is the study? It's an effective nursing intervention. And great. Well, massage is good for constipation, but it becomes more effective if you add fragrance. This is a nice thing to consider. It's not just giving yourself an abdominal massage that's going to be beneficial. You add the fragrance, it'll become more beneficial. And here's another one, aroma massage and meridian massage for stress and constipation in female college students. Well, guess what? It relieved both the constipation and the stress. All right. We can just keep on going through this. I'll leave the rest of it for you to consider here, but effective aromatherapy massage for the relief of constipation in the elderly, the effective aromatherapy massage on abdominal fat and body image in postmenopausal women. This one I wanted to bring to your attention because it has a very interesting combination, and this is something that I am frequently asked about. What do I do for cellulite? And the typical blend that is referred to over and over again is grapefruit and cypress. And here it is. They actually tested it, grapefruit and cypress. And what did they find? Aromatherapy massage could be utilized as an effective intervention to reduce abdominal subcutaneous fat, waist circumference, and to improve body image. Well, that's not really specific to the digestive system, but it's something that people have asked me about so many different times that I just thought it would be important to throw that in here. Now, let's go ahead, and if you would, switch over, or I can just read this to you. We have deepening practices. And now I would like to give you the first deepening practice, and let me see if I can find it here. Give me just a moment while I pull this file up. The deepening practices. Okay. Here we go. Now, with this information that you now have, we are going to test these things. So, number one, let's confirm what these studies have just told us. Practice or contemplative aromatherapy. You should remember the contemplative aromatherapy from Module 1. Go very slowly. Notice the olfactory notes. Notice the body sensations. But do this with the three most important essential oils used for nausea: ginger, peppermint, and lemon. So those of you who were following along, you've already put your ginger oil on the perfume strip. You've already sampled it. How does it feel now, 10 minutes later? Use these individually to study their specific effects. Practice before a meal and after a meal. It's perfectly fine to test something to see how it affects your digestion before a meal and then again after a meal. Notice the effect of each oil on the digestive system, appetite, and digestion. Use it if there are specific digestive symptoms. Keep a record of which oils you are using and what effects you get. But also, please don't overdo it. And keep in mind that frequent inhalation can irritate and even damage the sinus mucosa. All right, that's deepening practice number one. And this will follow what we just studied in terms of the modern research. Now let's go ahead and open another file. I should say it is already open. Let me draw your attention to it. And that is the file titled Digestive Therapeutics. And so let me pull that up, Digestive Therapeutics. This is the same system we used in modules 4 and 5 for the respiratory system, where we grouped different essential oils into therapeutic classifications. So if you are following along with me, you will see that the primary therapeutic groups of essential oils that we would like to think about for digestive problems are, first of all, analgesic. Why? Because digestive symptoms often produce pain, and therefore we would like pain relief. Second, anti-emetic, prevents or stops nausea and vomiting. Number three, antispasmodic, it relaxes the smooth muscle contraction of the digestive system and other systems as well. That's where the pain is coming from, and so the antispasmodic oils are very closely related to the analgesic oils. Carminative, that means it gets rid of gas and bloating. and you will see that this is a fairly large group of oils. That's because these aromatic herbs have this primary function. If you drink ginger tea, its primary effect is carminative. Of course, as it passes through the digestive system, it not only helps to remove the gas, but it also is antispasmodic, and it also is anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial and so forth. But all of the aromatic herbs are primarily carminative. That means they're helping our samana vata. When you read the subdoshas, it means it's getting rid of the stagnation of that type of vata in the upper GI tract specifically. And of course, the carminative function is going to be very beneficial for our mind and our emotions, because when we have stress, it causes gas and bloating a lot of times, indigestion. We're eating on the run. We're eating when we're unhappy. We're eating while we're arguing with somebody. It causes stagnation. And therefore, if the stagnation is happening, primarily, even if we're eating in a nice, relaxed state of mind, but we have gluten sensitivity, or we're eating the wrong kind of food, or we have an infection, the gas and bloating will create effects that will influence our moods, our mental states, and so forth. And so carminative doesn't just mean getting rid of gas and bloating physically. It means also, for a lot of people, enhancing mental clarity, because a lot of people have brain fog and depression and anxiety that comes directly from digestive stagnation. And carminative is the primary group that can help to clear that out. Next, essential oils for detoxification. Well, that's a big subject. There's a lot of people that can say a lot of things. This oil detoxifies and this oil detoxifies that and does this. This is sort of a questionable group. But these oils have some consistency among various authors, researchers, and teachers as having some supportive effect on detoxification pathways. In other words, there's some rationale for it. Next group, stomachic. That also means digestive tonic. A stomachic herb is that which strengthens the stomach function, that which gives our digestive power increased tone. And so these are things that basically have an appetizing effect that comes from strengthening the stomach. This is also a pretty good size group, and again, most of the aromatic herbs that we take as teas are found here. Finally, we have the group of herbs and essential oils called nervines. Nervines are those that strengthen the nervous system. There's various classes of nervines, but the two primary classes are those that strengthen a weak nervous system and those that relax a tense nervous system. And so these essential oils have general nervine properties. This is the starting point for the therapeutics. So if we go through and we look at it, you can see that the analgesics include a lot of the spices. Also eucalyptus, you learned that that was analgesic for the muscles and joints. Ginger, lemongrass, peppermint, rosemary, tulsi. Now, we should understand that some of these are highly dermotoxic. I'll just list these quickly, but you should know these already. Cinnamon and clove and peppermint and tulsi and lemongrass are all potentially highly dermotoxic. Ginger, potentially medium to high dermotoxic, and the low dermotoxic potential comes with eucalyptus and rosemary. Why am I taking the time to go through this? Because we're going to start blending these. So what are these analgesic oils going to be used for? Abdominal pain, food from food poisoning, cramping. And these cross over because you don't have to think about them being only for cramping of digestive pain. You can think about them also coming being helpful to treat cramping of dysmenorrhea, uterine cramping with the menstrual flow. Next group, the antiemetics, black pepper and cardamom, and elimi. This is a type of resin oil. It's a beautiful oil, sort of a relative of frankincense in a certain way. Ginger, peppermint, spearmint. Again, the high dermotoxic oils are going to be the mints And the medium to high will be the black pepper, the alimi, and the ginger. The low dermotoxic potential will be cardamom. And what are we going to use these for? Nausea and vomiting. The antispasmodics, if you look at these, which are the strongest, the most potentially problematic for application to the skin? Angelica can be photosensitizing. The basils can be dermotoxic. Peppermint, sage, tulsi, ginger again. However, a number of these are very low dermotoxic potential. Chamomile, clary sage, fennel, jatamansi, lavender, and neroli. And what are they used for? These would be the things that you would think about for the cramping of irritable bowels, cramping of constipation, food poisoning, any type of spasmodic situation, microbial infections, and so forth. This is what we just got done studying in the research file about peppermint oil being good for irritable bowel syndrome. Now, carminative. I've already given you an excellent, extensive translation of that term. What are the high dermotoxic potential? Ajwain oil, angelica oil, anise, basil, cinnamon, citruses or phototoxic, clove, mint, and tulsi, and black pepper. What are they used for? A lot of these have high dermotoxic potential. What are these used for? Gas, bloating, irritable bowels, nausea, food sensitivities, and so forth. Detoxifier. Well, this is something that's more of a supportive adjunct treatment here. It's not going to be primary, but whenever we have digestive problems, there's always going to be some toxicity that's going to build up. All right, now, we would think about chronic malabsorption, food allergies, sensitivity, food poisoning, microbial infections, and so forth. So the stomachic herbs, what are they used for? Loss of appetite, weak digestion, anorexia, loss of smell, and taste. This is something that is very important to consider, that the chemosensory disorder of loss of smell can be benefited by aromatherapy use. It's a different topic. I'm going to come back to it. I just wanted to mention it. But when there is loss of smell, there's loss of taste. And when there's loss of taste, next thing that happens is depression, loss of the enjoyment of life. If you cannot smell and you cannot taste, you are disconnected from a source of ongoing pleasure, and life becomes very one-dimensional. Therefore, aromatherapy is a tool that can potentially, depending on the cause, restore the sense of smell and strengthen the digestive system. So the nervines, I'll just wrap this up now. What are they used for? Irritable bowels, constipation from stress, and anorexia from stress. And that includes the bergamot and chamomile, the citruses, clary sage, all the things that are relaxing. Frankincense is relaxing. Jatamansi is relaxing. Lavender is relaxing. Rose. You wouldn't think that rose is actually something you could use for the digestive system. But guess what? If your digestive system is tense and blocked because of stress, think about the flowers. Think about lavender and rose and ylang ylang. Now let's go back and let's look at the deepening practices again, because now we're going to start making some formulas. And let's look at number three. Deepening practice number three. Make an abdominal massage oil with a single essential oil. So how are you going to decide? Well, you can choose based on the therapeutic classification. Pick one of those oils. Give yourself a gentle abdominal massage before a meal or in between. Notice the effects of each oil on the digestive system, appetite, and digestion. Try the spice oils for activation, keeping in mind very low dilution. You already have your dilution ratios. Very low dilution with spice oils. Try the spice oils for activation. And try the flower oils for relaxation. This is a very simple way to understand the two parameters of using essential oils for the digestive system. hot, spicy, aromatic things to get things moving, flowers, cooling, for calming things down. Use if there are specific digestive symptoms. Keep a record of which oils you're using and what effects you're getting. And again, please don't overdo it. Keeping in mind that skin sensitivities can develop several days after repeated applications, even with diluted oils. So what would we like to do here? The standard ratio, 1%, 6 drops per ounce. But for a massage oil, you can easily go 5% to 15% for most oils. 5% is 30 drops in an ounce of oil. 15% is going to be 3 times that much. Now be careful. Don't go too high at first. Just start slowly. Now, here's what I suggest. Start with your choice of some of the primary oils from the synergies. Let me give you that list. Primary oils: bergamot, that will be a citrus oil for relaxation. Black pepper. You can go ahead and if you want, you can start blending these now. You can take 1 ounce of your favorite carrier oil. You can get your pipette ready. You can put the pipette into one of these oils and you can measure it out. If you have a 1 ounce bottle, you can measure out, depending on the oil, 10 to 30 drops in exact science. Again, the list of oils that you would like to start with here as single notes. These are the primary ones that I am suggesting that you try for single notes for abdominal massage: bergamot, black pepper, cardamom, chamomile, fennel, ginger, and frankincense. These are a core group of oils, okay? And I'll give that list to you again: bergamot, black pepper, cardamom, chamomile, fennel, ginger, and frankincense. So these are some of the most important for abdominal massage. Now let's look at what are they going to do individually. And these statements that I'm going to give you are taken directly from the monographs of the essential oils that you already have. And that's why I gave you this list to start with. These are already things that you have monographs on, and so it's a good place to start. So, some direct quotes here from your monographs. Bergamot: massaged on the abdomen, it stimulates digestion and is considered an adjuvant in supporting the digestive transit. It's an adjunctive oil for supporting digestive transit. So some of you, undoubtedly, if you have chronic digestive problems, you're having difficulty with motility issues. It's very common. You might try bergamot. You might try bergamot as a single note, abdominal massage. And don't forget, when you're doing abdominal massage, go in a clockwise circle. All right, just work up the ascending colon, which is working from the lower right-hand abdomen, work gently up the right-hand side, across the liver, over the stomach, then down the left-hand side, past the descending colon, and then circle around in front of the bladder, okay? This is circular massage. Just start very lightly. Don't use a lot of pressure. Be very gentle. And then gradually, as things warm up and loosen up a little bit, you can start to circle around. You can do little miniature circles with your fingertips as you're circling around the clockwise shape on the abdomen and so forth. So what else does bergamot do? Used in aromatherapy, it has a nervine yet tonic effect, supporting emotional balancing and encouraging mental alertness. This is a very nice emotional benefit that you will feel. So even though it may not cure your digestive problems, you'll feel better emotionally, and that's a huge step in the right direction. The next one, black pepper. When would you like to use black pepper? Massaged on the upper abdomen, it stimulates digestion and is considered an adjunct treatment in supporting digestive transit. Also, when massaged on the lower abdomen, it warms and soothes the menstrual pain. Now, this is just a review because you should have read, all of you should have read and memorized all of your monographs so that you know all these things now about these essential oils. I'm just reminding you. So what would we think then if we're comparing these two oils? Well, bergamot is relaxing, and yet it stimulates the digestive transit, and yet it has an emotionally uplifting effect. The citruses in that way are more cooling by nature. The black pepper, on the other hand, is going to be more warming. And so therefore, if you have digestive problems that are benefited by a warm food diet and warm drinks, black pepper is probably going to be more effective. Let's move on here. Cardamom. This is also just a quick quote here from your monograph. On the upper abdomen, it supports digestion, and on the lower abdomen, it soothes menstrual pain. Who would have known? Cardamom is good for menstrual pain. Now, the digestive function of cardamom is not just the essential oil massaged on the abdomen. If we chew the cardamom seeds, supportive for the digestive system, relieves gas and bloating, in other words, carminative, regulates bowel movements, soothing to nausea. Now, what about chamomile? This is also for the herb and the oil. It controls acidity, prevents heartburn, supports the GI system for healing, regulates peristalsis, treats constipation. So many things from chamomile, both the herb and the essential oil. There's so many things here, I'm just going to mention very few most important calm stress-related digestive problems. That's what we can say. But it's specific for gastritis, specific for IBS, irritable bowels, specific for regulating peristalsis. Now, what about clove oil? Clove oil is highly dermotoxic. When massaged in the upper abdomen in proper dilution, it promotes healthy digestion and regulates peristalsis. It has a tonic effect on the nervous system, so it's a warming stimulant for the nervous system. It's uplifting. You should only use it highly diluted. That means 1%. You can also use this on the chest for the respiratory system, upper abdomen for healthy digestion, lower abdomen for menstrual pain, and sore muscles and joints for pain. So clove oil is a major ingredient in a lot of preparations, but be careful. It can burn you, and don't do it repeatedly without leaving a little time in between. I also make this mistake. I take a carrier oil. I like to use an infused herbal oil, such as Maha Narayan oil from the Ayurvedic system, and I'll be telling you about that. I like to take something like that and add a few drops of essential oils and rub it on my stiff neck, rub it on my stiff shoulder, and I will tend to forget how many times I've rubbed it on until finally my skin's getting a little irritated from it. So just go slowly. Fennel is a very important essential oil for the digestive system. It's soothing, slightly warming, and it is antispasmodic. And it's a very important essential oil for the female reproductive system. You wouldn't have thought of fennel, the fennel seeds, which are primarily used for digestion and carminative effect and for cooking. You wouldn't have thought that they would have a significant effect in aromatherapy for the female hormonal balance, but it does. So the antispasmodic effects are effective in the reproductive and digestive system. And so you can just make your blend in a carrier oil, fennel oil, and rub it on the abdomen for both the digestive antispasmodic effect and also for dysmenorrhea. It's very soothing to the menstrual pain, and it promotes healthy digestion. So we are now at ginger, and this is a very warming and energizing essential oil. It's a very potent support for the digestive function, as you know. And it's very important for a wide range of external conditions. It has the essential oil, has all the benefits concentrated of the root, but it has to be used very carefully in dilution. So if you're making a dilute blend to use for abdominal massage. It promotes healthy digestive function, it relieves gas and bloating, it prevents and treats nausea, helps with morning sickness, balances the appetite. Finally, this is the last one from the monographs that you can now use in this particular method, frankincense. It controls acidity, prevents heartburn, is soothing to the digestive tract in general, regulates peristalsis, promotes healthy digestion. And I have mentioned chewing the frankincense resin. And so I'll just mention that again, chewing the frankincense, a small tear of the frankincense resin, is very good for detoxifying the mouth and the gums, treating gingivitis, bacterial infection of the mouth, and the very low level of essential oil that will be gradually released over time into the digestive tract is also very antimicrobial and stimulant for treating the digestive system. And of course, if you put the frankincense essential oil in the carrier oil and give yourself an abdominal massage with it, it's also going to be very, very soothing to your mind. So now let's go back to the file for the deepening practices. And let's just look at practice number 5. Make one oil at a time, or I'm getting ahead of myself here. Let's now move to a different practice. This is very closely related. We can use the same oils, we can use the same concept, and instead of putting a few drops of essential oil into a carrier oil, we will instead put a few drops of essential oil onto a hot, wet towel and just use it as an abdominal compress. Or, if you like, you can do either or combine them. Give yourself an abdominal massage with the aromatic oil in a carrier oil first, and then you can put a hot, wet towel over that, and that will drive the oil in even more effectively. And so that's all that the deepening practice number 5 is about, is just start using one oil at a time in a compress. And the same basic idea, keep track of what you're doing, test the oils. One of the things that I'm encouraging you to research here yourself is what oils actually work best for you and which ones do you like the most. And those two things are very closely related. If you really like a particular oil, it's probably going to work better for you. Aromatherapy is different than taking herbs internally in that sense, is that there's the pleasure principle, where if you really like something, the therapeutic benefit will be greater. Now, this is not the same as having to take something terrible tasting like golden seal or gentian or something like that for your digestive problems. So enjoy the oils one at a time and just see what they do. Now, let's start to unpack this a little bit further and start moving into making some simple blends. And the idea with this is just start with 2 oils and then go to 3 and so forth. And you'll use them in the same ways. Okay, you will use them first on the perfume strip. You will use them for abdominal massage. You will use them on the compress. Those are the 3 main systems, methods of application that we are using these oils with. But as you make the blend, I want you to think about, what is the rationale? Why are you using that particular oil? What function does it have? And the more you start to think like this, the more you'll understand how to make the synergies. You would like to take something from the group of oils that are antispasmodic. You would like to take something from the group of oils that is anti-inflammatory. You would like to take something that's relaxing. If you take one oil from different groups of therapeutic functions that have the type of effect that you are looking for, you will be able to create a simple blend that does all of those things together. And so that's basically the rest of the deepening practices here. Number 2, start making blends for inhalation. Number 4, start making blends for abdominal massage. Number 6, start making blends for abdominal compress. And now we start looking at the synergies. I'll just give you a couple of quick sample blends that you might think about. Start with just two oils. How do cardamom and lavender go together? Some of you may have those out on your table. Why don't you go ahead and put a couple drops of cardamom? This is a nice way of testing a blend. You don't actually have to pour a large amount of oil into a bottle and then pour in another large amount in and find out that it doesn't blend nicely. Put a drop or two of cardamom on a perfume strip. Put a drop or two of lavender on the same perfume strip. That's one way to do it. Another way to do it is put a drop or two on a perfume strip of cardamom and then put a drop or two of lavender on another perfume strip and hold them up together under your nose. So, what does cardamom and lavender smell like together? What do ginger and peppermint smell like together? There's a great combination for nausea. Now, with that approach, you can now graduate to going back through the monographs and making some blends that have already been suggested in those monographs. For example, in the cardamom file, digestive soothe blend. 4 drops of cardamom, 6 drops of clary sage, 2 drops of ginger, 4 drops of chamomile. What is the rationale of this particular formula? Well, the major oil is actually clary sage, the nervine calmative relaxant. So the primary approach here is calm the nervous system. Next, 4 drops of cardamom. This is obviously carminative, stimulant to smooth peristalsis, comfortable flow. Next, 4 drops of chamomile. Those are equal parts, 4 drops cardamom and 4 drops chamomile. Chamomile is relaxing, soothing, primarily antispasmodic. And then finally, 2 drops of ginger. Well, why 2 drops? Well, because ginger is a much stronger oil. It's a heating oil. And if you were to put in 10 drops of ginger, it would also overwhelm the formula from the olfactory standpoint. Not that it matters so much, but it would make the oil, the blend, very hot and potentially dermotoxic. So you take these parts, 4 parts cardamom, 6 parts clary sage, 2 parts ginger, 4 parts chamomile, and you put those in the carrier oil, massage the abdomen for pain and promoting digestion. And one other formula that was already given in the monographs, in fennel. This is abdominal comfort. 4 drops fennel, 2 drops peppermint, 2 drops ginger. Peppermint and ginger are relatively much stronger oils, both in terms of fragrance and in terms of potential dermotoxicity. And so you can see then that the fennel is double the amount. This is specific for abdominal cramps and for regulating digestion. I hope that you're starting to see the methodology now of how we're going to do this. Now we can graduate to the synergies, and the synergies are what we want to use for specific symptoms. So if you would now open the file titled that's the respiratory synergies. Let me find digestive synergies here. Digestive synergies and formulas. And so I think that we're going to have to start winding it down here in a few minutes, but I'm just going to review this very quickly and give you an overview now of your homework, because now you know the 3 primary ways of using the herbs and using the essential oils. And this file also gives you a few comments on incorporating some herbs as well. So general indigestion, synergy. Use some carminative oils, such as angelica, anise, coriander, dill, cardamom. Relaxant oils, like lavender and chamomile, digestive tonic, and relaxant oils like the citruses. These are all going to be equal parts. Now, you don't have to mix all of these. Just pick one from each group. So pick cardamom from the carminative and mix it with one of the relaxant oils like lavender, one of the citruses. And then if you want to make it a little bit more medicinal, 1/4 to 1/2 part of something like tea tree or thyme. That's the logic between making a synergy. I'm giving you several oils. Pick one from each group and make a simple blend of 2 to 3 to 4 oils. And I'm giving you some suggestions as far as parts. If it doesn't say anything, They are equal parts, and if it does say something, it's reduced parts. So you make your synergy, and that's the core formula, and then you can start to add other things as well. Start with two, start with three. Start experimenting with it. Here's another synergy, constipation synergy. Equal parts of one or two from each category to stimulate peristalsis. How about fennel? How about to calm the inflammation? Maybe geranium. How about antispasmodic? Chamomile. How about a citrus for a digestive tonic? Then if you want to make it a little stronger, you can add a little mint, a quarter part. So everything else will be 4 drops each. The peppermint will be 1 drop each. Then, simple synergy for irritable bowels and inflammatory bowel disease. These are complicated situations, but using the essential oils for inhalation and abdominal massage and compresses is very safe. It's not going to make things worse. It will be therapeutic, but also just go slowly. Be gentle. Don't overdo it. It's the use of the herbs internally that has to be done very, very carefully, because people can have adverse reactions to even herbs that we think are going to be helpful for irritable bowels. Gingivitis. Okay, there's lots of information to continue with next week, but here's some essential oils that you could put in a little carrier oil. In a little bit of water and just use for a mouthwash. Don't swallow it, rinse it out, spit it out. This file also gives you a few suggestions for some added herbs to go along with these conditions. Now let's switch focus here a little bit and look at the integration now of all of these things into one program, where we are treating not just the abdomen externally with essential oils, not just inhaling it, but we are also drinking the tea, because that's the best way to do all of it together. And so therefore, I have given you a file that is the monographs, titled Pharmacopoeia of Aromatic Herbs and Spices. Because we're running out of time, and I do want to say a few words about asthma before we quit here, I'm going to give this to you as a homework assignment to read through how to use these particular herbs along with your aromatherapy. And so if you are using cardamom essential oil for abdominal massage, and you're inhaling it to stimulate the appetite, chew the cardamom seeds at the same time. Therefore, you are getting the essential oil through all these different channels, and you're going to have greatly enhanced effects. And so what are the herbs that I am going to suggest that you start working with? And these are very common things. You probably already do this a lot. Chew the cardamom. Put a little clove in with some of your cooking, like make some chai with it. Cinnamon, you can use it in your chai. You can cook it in your oatmeal. Chamomile, you can just make tea from it. Ginger, you can make fresh, chop up a fresh root and make tea with it. Lemon balm, very important, soothing aromatic herb. Oregano, use it in your cooking. Peppermint, make tea from it. Rosemary, make tea from it or use it in your cooking. Thyme, make tea, use it in your cooking. Tulsi, holy basil, make tea with it. This is just for you to study more in depth, and then the idea here to get you started, use all these things together. Drink the teas, use the spices, use the essential oils on the perfume strip, inhale them, use them in the compress, massage the abdomen. All right, let's pause with the digestive topic now. We still have a lot of things to cover next week, and that's okay. Let's take a look now a few things about asthma, because asthma is a very important topic that we did not finish from last week. Now, if you open the file, from last week on the respiratory synergies. This is the one that I posted today, but it refers back to the things that we covered. So this is organized into groups of primary oils and possible synergies. I just came up with a few possible synergies for you. You can come up with your own. So, cough, primary oils. Broken down into groups, aromatic spices, respiratory like eucalyptus, relaxants, the conifers, resins, citruses, balsamic oil like sandalwood, has a balsamic effect, meaning that it's soothing to the respiratory mucous membranes. And then a few others like Palo Santo and helichrysum that are famous for treating cough as well. Now, possible synergies, equal parts of eucalyptus, frankincense, and pinon pine. Then you add your specific expectorants, antitussives, mucolytics, anti-inflammatories, antimicrobials as needed. And for that, you will need to refer back to your respiratory therapeutics file. This is like a cookbook. You look at this particular page, you look at this particular synergy that you want to make, then you refer back to the therapeutics file, and you can start to blend things together. Common cold, primary oils, respiratory aromatic spices, conifers, antimicrobials, citruses, anti-inflammatories, possible synergies. Again, add specific expectorants, antitussives, and so forth, depending on what you need. Flu, influenza, primary oils, possible synergy. Same concept. Bronchitis, primary oils, possible synergy. This is a huge resource file for you, a lot of information here. I would like to start hearing from you on the webcast and calling in, telling me about the blends that you are making, how you're using them, and the effects that you are getting. Now we're into the serious preparation, formulation, blending. Let's start doing it. Next, primary therapeutic group here, sinusitis. I did cover this last week in last class in the lecture. This is now just clearly outlined since I gave you a lot of material, and now here it is on a piece of paper. Sinusitis, the primary oils, and possible synergies. But don't forget, I am just mentioning possible synergies. You can make all kinds of synergies yourself. Now we come to the topic here, asthma primary oils. I'll give you these primary oils, but you must understand some things about asthma before we start working with it. The primary oils that are generally recommended for asthma are going to be the respiratory oils like the conifers. And out of those, pine and pinon pine would probably be the first choice, as well as eucalyptus, a major oil. Aromatic spices, the primary one that's usually mentioned is rosemary, although tulsi is also very, very important. I'm sorry I didn't include that. Tulsi is a major aromatic spice oil, very beneficial for asthma. So please add that in. Relaxant and anti-inflammatory oils are very important for asthma. Lavender, clary sage, both types of chamomile, and rose as well. And then out of the citruses, the neroli is very nice, the orange blossom. And a very important mucolytic, which we have studied, which is inula, and that is on the way, by the way. We will be offering it soon. And then the antimicrobial oils, ravensara and frankincense. And so a possible synergy, frankincense, lavender, clary sage. So what do we need to understand about asthma very specifically? People respond very differently to essential oils when they have asthma. Asthma in young children is quite different than asthma in adolescents, and that's different than asthma in elderly people. There are many causes of asthma, and that includes allergens in the environment, food sensitivities. Gluten is a big factor. For children, it's frequently triggered by vaccines. It's worsened by antibiotics. There are many considerations when treating asthma. Now, this is what I have seen clinically, and also in working with many, many large groups of people at many events. Essential oils can definitely be very beneficial, but there is a risk that a specific person may respond adversely to a specific oil. Now, here's the good news. If you are just smelling an essential oil on a perfume strip, you are not going to have a full-blown major asthma attack. It will be a minor irritation that will give you an idea something could happen. And so I've had people that have come to events and they've said, you know, I don't get along with essential oils. It worsens my asthma. And my response has been, most likely what has worsened the asthma is the exposure to synthetic compounds that are so widely found in aromatic products. And I think that's a good general rule to say about asthma, is that if the essential oil is pure, the likelihood of it triggering asthma is much less than the likelihood of the asthma being triggered by a chemical sensitivity to synthetic fragrance compounds that are so common. This is another reason why quality control is so important. It's not just toxicity. If we take it internally, it can also trigger chemical reactions, chemical sensitivities, and immunological reactions. Now, the idea with treating asthma and aromatherapy is that it is best to start with one oil at low dose. That's the only way you can really find out if something is going to be beneficial or harmful. If you start with one oil and it is at a very low dose, that is in a diffuser, start with it in a diffuser. If you are using a single note oil in a diffuser in a normal sized room, most likely the possibility of having an adverse reaction is extremely low. And if there is any adverse reaction, it will be mild and transient. So obviously, if you don't feel like experimenting with essential oils and asthma, don't do it. But you may be pleasantly surprised because they can be beneficial. It's just that if we think back, the essential oils are coming directly in contact with the respiratory mucous membranes. That is both positive and negative. The positive side is that they give a direct route to treatment. And so something like inula in a diffuser over a period of time may have a very significant gradual cleansing effect through its mucolytic actions that could be extremely helpful for treating chronic asthma in adults. Something like Tulsi, and I will share with you a personal experience, and this is why I believe that essential oils can be very beneficial. A friend of mine who is a medical doctor suffered every winter from asthma because of the cold and damp. Well, this is obviously what we would call in Ayurvedic terms a kapha condition. And so I suggested that he use the Tulsi oil in steam, and he went so far as to get a steam tent, and he actually put it in his clinic. And every morning he would go in and he would put a few drops of Tulsi oil in the steam tent and take a steam bath with Tulsi oil, and at the same time he would do pranayama, yogic breathing exercises. He did that every day through the winter, and the asthma stopped. And the last I heard, it never came back. One season of treating it daily made a huge difference using only the Tulsi. Now, what would you like to do? Use the Tulsi in that particular way. You could put it in the diffuser. You could use it direct steam inhalation. But be very careful. It's a very strong oil. And you could also start by trying Tulsi tea and see how you feel just with Tulsi tea. So these are just a few basic pointers. And so my suggestion here, start with the primary oils that are listed here. in this particular file, start with one, use it lightly, and then go to another one. And if you get along with both, then you can put them in a blend. See how that works. Go very slowly. Now, I am encouraging you to do this only for adult asthma. We're going to talk about this a little bit more in the module for essential oils for children. It is strongly advised, do not use essential oils for asthmatic children without further information. The same principles apply, but asthmatic children can be much more sensitive and reactive. They can also be greatly benefited, but you must go very, very slowly. My suggestion is do a lot of other holistic treatments first. Take care of the diet. Start using the aromatic teas. Do those things first to build up the system, and don't try to attack it directly with aromatherapy. This is an important principle. If somebody is highly sensitive, do other therapies first to build up the system and reduce the sensitivity, and then gradually start to bring in the aromatherapy. That's what I would advise for treating children's asthma. Eucalyptus is specifically contraindicated for young children in general, and that's because their respiratory system is not strengthened. Now, when we hear this kind of information in the aromatherapy world, there's a lot of disagreement. That's because it's a very new field. A lot of these oils are only now being applied to widespread application, and there's a lot of individual differences in how people react. So the general safety guidelines are to err on the side of caution first, and then gradually build up using one oil at a time and start to see how it works. Because I can tell you, don't use eucalyptus oil for children, especially asthmatic children. But then I can also tell you, I have heard countless testimonials from parents who have told me that their children's respiratory conditions cleared up as soon as they started using respiratory oils in a diffuser. So this is something that I have a responsibility to tell you both sides of the picture. These things are effective, but don't just assume that they're always going to be safe. Always be cautious. All right. That's good enough for today in terms of lecture. Let's go ahead and open it up for a little bit of discussion. We have quite a bit of information to continue with some of the digestive things, but some of those topics, you should read the articles first. Like, for example, read the article on natural dental care, and you will have a good introduction to what we might be talking about next week with using some essential oils for dental conditions. So if you take the time and read the articles first, then we can cover it very briefly when we come back. And then we will be moving into the topic of using essential oils for the nervous system. All right, I'll turn it back to you, Colleen. And let's see if anybody would like to raise their hand after that extensive amount of information about specific oils and blends.
Thank you so much, David. I wanted to share, if you have a question or sharing, please type that into the webcast if you're on the webcast. And if you're on the phone, please press 1. And we'll start with a question really from Kathy. What would you recommend for a 4-year-old with croup?
I would recommend what I just recommended. Go very, very slowly. And the way that I would like to address this, you know, I would be tempted to say, you should try these essential oils in this particular combination, but this is where, when you're talking about a 4-year-old child, the possible reactions have to be really seriously considered, okay? So what would you like to do in a situation like this. It has to be a mild oil, first of all. It has to be something that is going to have very low risk. Well, what could that possibly be? What are some of the things that you would use? First of all, I would say essential oils are not the primary treatment. I would say that the aromatic teas are the primary treatment. So how about a little fresh ginger tea with a little bit of Tulsi in it? Start giving a little bit of that to sip on, okay? That's going to start to work from the inside out. Then, if you would like to use the essential oils, my suggestion is cardamom, okay? Now, cardamom is mild. It's relatively benign and safe. It's not going to necessarily be a problematic oil. I just got done telling you that eucalyptus probably shouldn't be used for younger children, but you could try just a little eucalyptus. You know, it's more problematic in an asthmatic situation. So what would you like to do? How about a chest rub? You remember the recipe for a chest rub? It's the same basic dilution with making a carrier oil and putting a small amount of essential oil in. Use maybe 1 to 2% in the carrier oil. And so what I would suggest, the oils that I would think of right away, cardamom, Eucalyptus radiata, species Eucalyptus radiata, and pinon pine. And these are all very mild oils and very soothing. And then you would think also of frankincense for soothing the cough. And then you would want to think about the antitussive oils very specifically. And I don't know if you can get it, but the inula oil would probably be a very good oil to add. And I would just start with that. That's plenty, actually. Do one oil at a time. Don't use all four of those together. So if you have Eucalyptus radiata, I mean, that's an old home remedy. Countless parents have put eucalyptus on their child's chest. That's what's in Vicks VapoRub. All right, so when we're talking about risk, it's actually very, very low. Just go ahead and do a little bit of the Eucalyptus radiata in a blend, or you could actually put it on the compress as well, a few drops of that on a hot, warm compress. Just do it once. See how the reaction is. It should have a soothing kind of effect. Okay. Then you may also want to think about some of the relaxant oils. A couple drops of lavender is very, very good place to start also. Again, compress, chest rub, things like that. But for the chest rub, the primary oils, just to repeat it one more time, the Eucalyptus radiata, the pinon pine, frankincense, cardamom, and lavender. Those are general. Just start very slowly with those. Everything should be fine. And then also give the aromatic tea of ginger and Tulsi. And hopefully that will be helpful. I'll write a little bit more on the webcast file for next week, but that's something to go ahead and get started with right away since you don't want to wait a week to be treating that. If that seems to be okay, now don't do this over and over again. Just do it once in the evening and see how the cough responds during the night. Maybe do it one more time in the morning and then one more time at night. Don't do it. Don't put the chest rub on many, many times a day, because then after a few days runs the risk of getting skin sensitization. Try that. Go slowly. And also something simple like cardamom in a diffuser could be very helpful also. So these are just simple things. I don't know the child. I don't know the health background. I don't know if there's asthma involved. There's so many things I don't know. I'm just trying to give very, very conservative possibilities, and I'll just advise, go one oil at a time and see how it feels. So I hope that's helpful. Okay, anybody calling?
Yes, there is. Thank you, David, for that. We have Regina. Go ahead, Regina. You have the mic.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm wondering if you can suggest any essential oils for hiatal hernia and also maybe something for stomach cancer. I have a client who's presented me with her case of stomach cancer, and I know that's quite complex, but I'm wondering if there's any essential oils that might be helpful for that, and also for a case of hiatal hernia in somebody else.
Well, for hiatal hernia, there's actually specific manipulation techniques. Are you familiar with those?
No.
All right. You could do some simple abdominal massage with some of the basic digestive synergies. And so if you look at the file today on digestive synergies, you will see that the very first one, general indigestion. You could make a synergy from one of the carminative oils, one of the relaxant oils, one of the digestive tonics like that. You could do something with fennel or ginger. Start with one or two oils very simply like that for abdominal massage. Now, that's only supportive, okay, because for hiatal hernia, it's actually a structural problem. Essential oils are not going to actually fix a structural problem, but they can help symptomatically. And there are certain manipulation techniques that body workers can learn to basically help the diaphragm to be aligned properly. So that's the real treatment. And then, of course, helping the diet as well so that the stomach doesn't have to do so much work. It's partly a dietary problem, partly herbal medicine, partly manipulation. But the essential oils, I would just suggest a simple synergy from the general indigestion group. Now, in terms of stomach cancer, well, I can't say we can treat stomach cancer. What I can say is that the essential oils that we talked about today can be used in the different forms for inhalation. As we know, it's good for nausea. It can be used for compresses. It could be used for gentle massage. As always, when cancer is involved, we always have a big red flag about doing massage. So I would just suggest compress instead, okay? Or you could just put the oil on without any kind of deep pressure or anything like that. These are complicated medical situations that actually require specific treatments other than aromatherapy. Aromatherapy is very limited in what we're going to be able to do for these kind of conditions, only supportive. But in most cases, in both cases, herbal medicine can also be very supportive. So if you want to go ahead and type that into the webcast, I'll go ahead and answer more extensively with a few other ideas of things you could think about in terms of herbs. And otherwise, I would just say a very simple supportive treatment using some of the indigestion synergy oils is about all that I could offer for that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, you're most welcome. All right, so one more question, possibly. Anybody else
calling? Okay. Yep, no one else with their hand up.
Okay.
So would you like a webcast question?
Let me go ahead and take a look here. So many complicated medical questions here.
What about the one from Kim?
Right, I see here a two-part question. Okay, my suggestion is, because we are actually at the stopping time, and because these questions really deserve quite a bit of time to answer, I think that I will go ahead and wrap it up and invite everybody to come to the breakout groups, and I will go ahead and respond to these webcast questions by writing in the next file. So
that's great, David. We do have a couple people with their hands up. Do you think we could take one caller?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, if people are calling in now.
Perfect. Okay. We have, it just happened. So, Arpita, you have the mic.
Yes, thank you. We talk a lot about using a diffuser, and I haven't heard you mention room sprays at all. I'm wondering what you think of room spray as opposed to a diffuser, and what dilution percentage you would recommend in a room spray.
Well, a room spray is water-based, and it's very flexible in terms of how you would like to make it. A simple combination is about 1/4 essential oils and 3/4 water. You can just put it in a 4-ounce misting bottle, shake it up before you use it. That's a standard way of doing it. And the difficulty, or the limitation, I should say, with the room spray is that it gives one application and then it basically just evaporates. It just sinks down to the floor, the mist disappears, and it doesn't have any real lasting type of effect. And the same actually happens with the diffuser, where the micro droplets come out of the diffuser and they fill up the atmosphere. But then if the diffuser is only running for 1 minute, then the cloud of micro droplets evaporates very quickly and the fragrance disappears and the therapeutic benefits disappear also. And so the advantage of using a diffuser is that it continues to put the mist out. And the only way you would be able to do that with a mister is if you just stood there and continued spraying it, you know, 5 or 10 minutes at a time. So misting is okay for a sort of short-term freshening up of the atmosphere, but a diffuser is really much more therapeutic because it will continue to put out the essential oil into the room on a continuous basis. Now, diffusers typically run now on timers, and we don't have to have the diffuser running continuously. That will use up a lot of oils. And even after about 10 or 15 minutes, we stop smelling it. We'll still get the respiratory benefits, but we won't be appreciating the fragrance because sinus has become accustomed to the stimulation. If we go out of the house and come back in, we'll smell it again. But the diffusers now that work the best run for about 20 minutes on and then about a half an hour to an hour off. And so they come on intermittently, and that's really the best way to do it. It's superior to doing misting. So I would just say misting is just a very temporary freshening up of the atmosphere. That's the main difference. Not highly therapeutic. On the other hand, if you want to mist with a hydrosol, and this is another nice way to do it, if you're not spraying it directly on your face or towards your eyes, you can use that recipe I gave you where you put your essential oil blend or pure essential oil, 1/4 part and then 3/4 parts of water, and shake it up. But if you want to do misting, you can also do it with a hydrosol. The hydrosol is the aromatic water. I've introduced that earlier on, Module 2. And hydrosols are very easily accessible and they're very cost effective. And a lot of the hydrosols are actually a very important part of skincare routines also. Rose water, spray it right on your face. It's wonderful for the complexion. Neroli, orange blossom water, famous preparation for cosmetic purposes and so forth. And so this is a different way of misting. It's not room misting, it's actually cosmetic misting for the skin. And misting hydrosols on yourself is actually more therapeutic, I think, than misting essential oils in the room. So I hope that's a helpful answer.
Yes, thank you.
You are most welcome. Okay, Colleen, we are now out of time, and so I will just invite everybody to go ahead and move to the breakout groups, and you can continue your discussion with fellow students, and I will suggest that you read through the files again, study them for next week. We covered a lot of information, and I will answer the webcast questions next week that are remaining, and I'll just go ahead and sign off and wish everybody a wonderful week of using your essential oils and learning about them and benefiting from them. And so I'll turn it back to you, Colleen.
Thank you so much, David. Thank you.